This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Did you know that right now, GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit GEICO.com to learn more.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Restrictions return. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Tuesday, June 30th. Thanks for being with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Spikes in coronavirus cases are leading states like California, Arizona, and New Jersey to rethink how they're handling economic reopenings.
The Supreme Court has struck down a Louisiana abortion law, ruling a key feature leads to violation of a woman's constitutional rights.
Overseas, Chinese lawmakers today unanimously approved a broad new law designed to put down protests in Hong Kong.
And some recent college grads will have to weigh this conundrum. What if my first job isn't what I want?
Take the focus off of I'm going to achieve this perfect thing that's going to launch me on this path, and move towards, like, I've got a job. You can learn something in any job. Really drill down on, what can I learn here? What can I figure out? What can I take to the next employer?
Catherine Dill at the Wall Street Journal with advice on when the first gig out of school is not a good fit. A surge in coronavirus cases is motivating states and cities to readjust reopenings. Numbers-wise, the 39,000 infections recorded Sunday were the second straight decrease, but still above highs from April. Meanwhile, Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti announced a hard pause on when movie theaters, theme parks, and other entertainment venues can reopen. Beaches will be closed for the upcoming July 4th weekend.
This period will be our second big test to see whether or not we can do the things, all the wisdom we have learned, to collectively apply that and to make sure we do our part to keep people living and to keep livelihoods moving forward.
Elsewhere, Arizona Governor Doug Ducey has now ordered the closure of bars, nightclubs, gyms, movie theaters, and water parks for at least 30 days, and Arizona public schools won't open until at least August 17th. Also, New Jersey will not allow restaurants to reopen for indoor dining on Thursday as planned. New York City may do the same. In Kansas, Governor Laura Kelly imposed a statewide mandate requiring the wearing of masks in public spaces. The Supreme Court has thrown out a Louisiana law that could have closed two of the state's three abortion clinics. The four liberal justices decided that the key feature has no medical benefits and thus interferes with a woman's right to end a pregnancy. That feature, that abortions could be performed only by doctors granted permission by a local hospital. The fifth vote, however, came from Chief Justice John Roberts, who wrote separately that a Texas precedent from 4 years ago required the same result. U.S. Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana.
4 years ago, in a case out of Texas, same statute, same issue, the Chief Justice voted with the conservatives. Today, he voted with the liberals. He changed his vote. He flip-flopped.
The decision marked the third time this month Justice Roberts has angered conservatives who expected him to line up with the court's right wing. In another ruling, the Supreme Court ordered changes to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, saying the agency's director can be removed for any reason. More on the abortion decision from Richard Wolff, Supreme Court correspondent at USA Today. Rich, take us through this.
The court basically did what it had done in 2016 in Texas. Texas had some restrictions on abortion clinics, very similar, almost identical to Louisiana's now. Basically, the main restriction is ordering that doctors performing abortions at clinics have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals, which is often very difficult to get and often of little benefit, according to the majority in both court, both decisions, both in Texas in 2016 and now. So the court ruled 5-4. There were four liberals in the what's called the plurality, and then Chief Justice John Roberts, basically with once again the deciding vote, writing separately but agreeing with the judgment. The court ruled 5-4 that the restrictions that Louisiana placed on those clinics constituted an undue burden on women. In the majority opinion, Associate Justice Stephen Breyer, one of a Democratic presidential appointee, Bill Clinton's appointee, said basically that the burdens outweigh the benefits, that there are very few benefits to any of these requirements because abortion is basically a safe procedure, very seldom requiring hospitalization. So what's the point of all this? Chief Justice Roberts didn't really go along with that, with the way that the opinion was written. So he wrote separately simply saying, look, I disagreed 4 years ago in Texas. I thought the restrictions there were okay, but the court decided that they weren't, and these are identical. So if they were not okay in Texas, they're not okay here. Basically, that's a decision based on what's called stare decisis, which is the precedent of the court. So four liberals with one opinion, Chief Justice Roberts with a separate opinion, constituted the majority, and then the four other conservatives on the court each separately dissented somewhat vehemently from that ruling.
Okay. So what has become interesting here is that Chief Justice John Roberts is in some ways the new Anthony Kennedy as a swing vote?
You could say that. But, you know, I mean, and we'll go back to 2 weeks ago, obviously, and discuss two other cases where he was key. But in this one, you know, he made it clear that on the facts, he sort of disagrees. He disagreed in Texas. He didn't think this was an undue burden to require that clinic doctors get admitting privileges at local hospitals. He was opposed then, and he's now only not opposed because he was overruled then, in essence. And he's saying precedent is precedent. Now, that's not always the case. So it might have been a convenient way for him to align with liberals. There's various analyses as to why he might have. You'll remember Associate Justice Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation process 2 years ago, obviously very contentious. And one of the things that came up during that was his position on abortion, because replacing swing voted Anthony Kennedy, it was thought, by the pro-choice crowd, it was thought, the court is now going to swing against abortion. And it could be that Roberts, had he gone the other way, it would have been a 5-4 decision by the conservatives, and everyone would have been pointing at Kavanaugh, even though he didn't write much. He only wrote 2 pages in dissent. But everyone would have said, aha, Kavanaugh went back on some of the things he promised. Back then, he had told Susan Collins, a very moderate Republican from Maine, that Roe v. Wade was precedent on precedent, that, you know, the whole nature of abortion decisions by the Supreme Court, he sort of intimated would be protected simply because they've been on the books for 45 years. And here he was on the other side. So Roberts may have just kind of been protecting him. This decision only really affects Louisiana. Just like the last one affected Texas, and there are dozens of other restrictions on abortion passed by Republican and conservative legislatures that are headed toward the Supreme Court, and so there will be more battles to be fought. But yes, Roberts is the closest thing to a swing vote now.
I'm speaking with Rich Wolf, Supreme Court correspondent at USA Today. He's written about how the Supreme Court has struck down an abortion clinic restrictions in Louisiana, which is a defeat for conservatives. Dissenters in this case said what regarding Louisiana?
Well, they basically said that they say that it is not that much of a burden to require that doctors get admitting privileges at hospitals. They quibbled with the original district court. That would be the court that conducted a trial, the very first court to hear this. They basically argued that their are benefits to having admitting privileges, that it's there to protect the health and safety of women, and that the benefits pretty much outweigh the burdens. They don't see it as a major burden. They didn't see it as a major burden in the Texas case either.
That's Richard Wolf, Supreme Court correspondent at USA Today. 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us on this Tuesday. This portion of the program is brought to you by Dell. Dell Technologies advisors are here to help businesses work remotely with unparalleled collaboration solutions like Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill on both sides of the political aisle are demanding that the White House detail intelligence indicating Russia had paid bounties to insurgents to have American forces killed in Afghanistan. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York is among those who wants to know why President Trump apparently wasn't briefed on the threat.
The fact that the White House didn't brief the president, that's another question that should be asked. Why did the personnel in the White House not brief the president on something so crucial?
She was on Fox Business. White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany.
There's no consensus in the intelligence community and that the dissenting opinions from some in the intelligence community exist.
Senior Republicans in Congress, often supportive of Mr. Trump, said that even if the intelligence isn't yet fully verified, it should be taken seriously and the president should have been made aware of it. The Wall Street Journal reports some officials said there was no prominent intelligence that showed Russia meddling in Afghanistan. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Arizona's Republican Governor Doug Ducey has shut down bars, movie theaters, gyms, and water parks amid a dramatic resurgence of coronavirus cases.
You are safer at home. The virus is widespread. So if you don't need to go out, don't. Go out.
Leaders in several other states are also taking action, ordering residents to wear masks in public. Among those implementing the face covering order is the city of Jacksonville, where the mask-averse president plans to accept the Republican nomination in August.
Number two.
The U.S. is not on a safe list of destinations for non-essential travel due to be unveiled by European Union governments today. The 27-member bloc is expected to give approval to leisure or business travel starting tomorrow to 14 countries beyond its borders when they vote on the list. Russia and Brazil, along with the U.S., are among countries that do not make the initial safe list.
Number three.
The Supreme Court has struck down a Louisiana law that could have closed two of the state's three abortion clinics, ruling in a 5-4 vote that it was virtually identical to a Texas measure that the court invalidated 4 years ago. Justices reaffirmed their 2016 decision that the key feature in both the Texas and Louisiana laws, that abortions could be performed only by doctors granted permission by a local hospital to admit a patient should something go wrong, has no medical benefits and thus interferes with a woman's constitutional right to end a pregnancy. China has approved a contentious law that would allow authorities to crack down on subversive and secessionist activity in Hong Kong. The law has sparked fears it would be used to curb opposition voices in the semi-autonomous territory. And more economic fallout from the pandemic. Cirque du Soleil has filed for bankruptcy protection and plans to fire about 3,500 circus workers and back office employees as part of a restructuring plan. The world-famous troupe started in the 80s as a small group of street performers in Quebec and grew to become the largest theatrical producer in the world, performing in more than 50 countries for almost 200 million spectators. And in New York City, all Broadway performances will be suspended through the rest of 2020.
Well, I saw Cirque du Soleil once. I forget what performance it was in Las Vegas. My mouth is open the whole time.
A little scary, too.
Yes. Thanks, Jen. 22 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. Layoffs and furloughs have put as many as 40 million people out of work in the past 90 days. With a 13.3% unemployment rate, job seekers of all ages don't necessarily have the luxury of holding out for a position that matches their skills or dreams. Catherine Dill, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says that means recent college grads may find themselves vying for positions they wouldn't previously have applied for. So what are these young adults to do? Catherine, set the scene.
You know, we were looking at what are the things that drive. We know that there's a lot of specific things that happen to graduates who enter the workforce during a recession. One of them is that their wages remain depressed very often over the entire arc of their career. And a thing that drives that is this labor mismatch. You start off in a job that either isn't utilizing the skills you already have or isn't something that you want to pursue, but it's the job you can get. And so then, if and when you're able to pivot a few years later, very often a couple of years of potential skill building, professional networking, and wage growth may very well be lost.
There was a quote from one of those kind of career experts in your story, which I thought was great, and I hadn't heard it before, but she says, don't make the perfect enemy of good.
which I thought was fascinating. What does she mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, what a lot of experts recommend is that, you know, there's all this pressure on college graduates now. Like, you're supposed to find your dream job right away. I mean, that's the whole point. You've been training to find your dream job. And even in a great economy, that's not usually what happens immediately in your first job. And so, you know, she's really recommending take the focus off of I'm going to achieve this perfect thing that's going to launch me on this path and move towards, like, I've got a job. You can learn something in any job. Really drill down on what can I learn here? What can I figure out? What can I take to the next employer? And don't waste that time just because this doesn't look the way you imagined that it might have.
We're speaking with Catherine Dill, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called What to Do When Your First Job Isn't a Good Fit. All right, so some of that specific advice is what here, Catherine? What do you do? You're in that job that you don't necessarily want, but you are supposed to at least kind of maximize your time there.
Well, one of the things that I thought was great advice is to really identify the source of your frustration, because almost everyone at every, you know, stage of their career has been in the position of thinking, I really hate this job. But, you know, one of the experts we spoke with really recommended drill down into what that's about. You might like this type of role or this industry in a different environment. You know, do you not like your boss? Is your company going through a really challenging time and it's making the environment toxic? Or is this just not exactly what you want to do? Spend some time, and that's the other advice that I thought was really helpful, was really spend some time. You know, spend some time thinking about what that's about, but also spend some time adjusting, because any new job, but particularly entering the workforce, takes a little bit of time to adjust. So, you know, don't be eyeing the exits after 3 months, because that's really only when you're starting to kind of, like, get your bearings.
Mm. But that's kind of the Gen Z way right now. They're looking for that promotion or job switch after 6-12 months.
Well, it's sort of tough to qualify what the Gen Z way is exactly. I mean, the oldest members of this generation have only been in the workforce. The oldest college graduate members of this generation have only been in the workforce a couple of years. And now they're facing, you know, a global pandemic, a depressed economy, a, you know, job market that seems to have turned on a dime. And so it is kind of tough to generalize about what they want versus what they're doing to manage.
Thanks, Catherine. Catherine Dill, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. With all that COVID-19 is doing to the economy, every single one of us is taking another look at how we spend our money. And if you're like me, you were already frustrated trying to keep all your accounts, spreadsheets, statements, and portfolios straight. But there's a better way. Organize all your finances in one place with Quicken, so it's easy to see it all, manage it all, and reach your goals with confidence. Quicken breaks down your spending automatically so you can be smart and maximize your savings. You'll have everything you need to review every detail of your finances. And with over 17 million users, Quicken's been the most trusted personal finance software for over 30 years, and it's only getting better. Saving for your kids' college fund? Planning for retirement? Let Quicken help you meet your goals. And right now, you can try it risk-free. Get the peace of mind and freedom that comes with taking better control of your finances today. Try Quicken risk-free for 30 days and get 25% off when you go to quicken.com/Gordon. That's 30 days risk-free and 25% off when you go to quicken.com/Gordon.
An all-star team of the world's best journalists bring you the facts each and every morning. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday, June 30th. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Dr. Anthony Fauci and other health officials testify before Congress today on the state of the pandemic. A surge in COVID-19 cases in Arizona has led the governor there to close bars, gyms, movie theaters, and water parks for at least 30 days. Supreme Court strikes down a Louisiana abortion law. Bloomberg reports that Europe is likely to extend a travel ban for Americans another 2 weeks. Wall Street Journal says Uber in talks to buy Postmates, and the heartwarming reunion between a quarantine nurse and her 2-year-old. That story in about 20 minutes. The past month has been surreal for black police officers who find themselves straddling the line between black and blue. Standing on the front lines with fellow police, they have been pelted with rocks and racial insults from Black Lives Matter protesters who say they don't understand how a black person can be part of a racist police system. It's a story by Jeff Mordock, Justice Department reporter at the Washington Times. Jeff, what's being said?
Well, I talked to a bunch of African-American police officers about their experience in today's anti-policing climate, and what they're going through is pretty stunning. They're getting they're hearing racial insults from protesters out on the front lines who are protesting for racial equality and for George Floyd. They're sending they're calling them racial names, and then they go back to the police station and they have to deal with some white officers giving them grief, calling, you know, George, saying that they think George Floyd was a criminal. They want to know what else was on the tape. And they feel like they're really caught between two worlds where they're getting it from both sides.
All right. So how widespread would you say these feelings are? Any way to read that?
I think they're very widespread. I mean, every police officer I talked to discussed how they are trapped between two worlds, and they're constantly viewed, because they're a cop, they're constantly viewed by the black community as not being black enough, and because they're black, they're viewed by a lot of white officers as not being blue enough, and they're constantly having to justify one or the other to one of the, to whichever side they're dealing with at that moment. It's just absolutely exhausting, they tell me.
Is anybody listening?
Not particularly. I mean,
do they even bring it up?
No, they don't. Yeah. And that's part of it. One woman I had spoken with, who was a Las Vegas police officer for 27 years, her supervisor had told her something incredibly both racist and sexist that cannot be repeated on radio, and she spoke up, and that officer was sentenced to sensitivity training, and she didn't get promoted for 27 years. So they also view a double standard when they speak up. Another officer told me speaking up is career suicide as far as they're concerned.
So how do these folks manage?
It's, as I said, it's exhausting. And they look at their success as what they try to do is bridge the gap between the police and the black community. And, you know, do community policing. That's why a lot of them told me they wanted to be police officers. They grew up in the neighborhoods. They wanted to make it in some of these neighborhoods that they're now patrolling. They wanted to make a difference, and they thought the way to make the difference would be to help bridge the gap between the black community and their neighborhood and the police department. And some have had a lot of success. Some have not had success. And it's been a lot of frustrating because you have two communities that are deeply distrustful of each other, and bridging that divide just seems like a Herculean task.
We're speaking with Jeff Mordock, Justice Department reporter at The Washington Times. Talk about bridging that gap, because there were an example or two about how this seems to be working, but can take a long time.
Well, what's interesting is the police officer in Las Vegas I spoke with, she was working in a community where she grew up with. It was an impoverished community with a high crime rate, so bad that they burned the police station down during the Rodney King riots in 1992, and they took a community policing approach. They had farmers. They set up farmers markets. They gave away school supplies. They brought Santa down in a police helicopter every Christmas with police officers pretending to be elves to greet the kids. They would hold community forums. They really believed and they really invested in community policing, and that has made a big difference. Crime has gone down. When we've had the current anti-police situation, they didn't have the violent protest and the civil unrest other communities had. The reason for that, she credits, is they built the gap, built that bridge, but she cautions it took 20 years to build that bridge. What they did in 92 after the station paid off, she said, really didn't start paying off until about 2014, when you had the unrest after the death of Eric Garner, after the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. So it paid off, and now the crime in that community has gone way down, but it was a 20-year project.
Thanks, Jeff. Jeff Mordock, Justice Department reporter at The Washington Times. It's 20 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday. It is time now for the mic drop with This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, if your Christmas tree is looking especially robust this December, you can thank the pandemic and a healthy dose of Guinness beer. According to Fox News, as the pandemic shut down bars and restaurants, many beer makers had kegs piling up and had to figure out what to do with all that unused beer. Guinness, for its part, turned to nature. The beer brand has reportedly been using hundreds of thousands of unused kegs of beer to fertilize Christmas trees. According to the company's director of operations, the vast majority of that beer went to willow and Christmas tree farms, where it's used as a nutrient for plants.
Oh, man.
Which is, a beer foul of sorts.
Yes.
Obviously pouring out all that beer, but at least I guess it's going to a good cause, right?
Okay.
It's going to get poured out one way or another, right? Unless, you and I went there and just decided to, spend a month or more. Just having it funneled right in.
You've had the Guinness in Ireland.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was not the real way.
Yes. I was not a Guinness fan at all until I went to Dublin last year.
Yeah.
Did the brewery tour, got to get behind the bar and pour my own pint and the whole thing. And I have a newfound appreciation for Guinness. But it definitely tastes different, seemingly, in Ireland than it does here. And they said that that's true, that by the time it gets shipped over here and there's like a process that the bar owners here have to do to sort of put it together and everything. And it does have a different taste here than it does over there.
I can understand that. So if you were one of these people charged with emptying a keg at the base of a tree, you would have cried.
Yes, yes. Well, again, I suppose it was where it came from. Was it here in the States or was it was it in Ireland?
Right.
You know, because I have to say, I really haven't drank much Guinness at all. Maybe haven't had one Guinness since I've come back from Ireland. That was an Ireland thing, and I'm probably not going to have it again until I go back.
These trees that are getting it aren't sap producers, right? Otherwise, that could make for an interesting taste of sap.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, and you got people there just kind of with their mouths open waiting for the sap to come out, or licking trees,
things
of that nature. Yeah. And we're sure, Gordon, that Patriots fans can't wait to see new quarterback Cam Newton in his new uniform later this summer. But the question is, what number will he be wearing? Newton wore number 1 for the Carolina Panthers, but if he wants to be numero uno in New England, he'll have to get it from someone who's been with the Patriots even longer than Bill Belichick, Pat Patriot. Yes, the Pats mascot has been wearing a number 1 jersey since debuting in the mid-90s, and that got some people wondering on social media if Pat might be in line for a big payday from Newton in order to give up his number. If Pat holds his ground, Newton could try getting his old college number of number 2, where at least he would have a human being who talks to negotiate with. Number 2 is currently worn by backup quarterback Brian Hoyer.
Ooh.
So there you go.
Oh, Hoyer has no shot.
Yeah, well, not only that, but he's got very little shot of being on the team, too, at this point, as the team keeps bringing in new quarterbacks. So, yeah.
I think if I were Cam Newton, I'd go for the number 2 or just a brand new number altogether. Fresh start.
Yeah.
Right? Kind of dust, shake off the dust from your latter part of time in Carolina, and just go for a fresh start.
Yeah, it might be time for that. Yeah.
Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News.
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Don't forget, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter, at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well, at Gordon Deal. The next COVID-19 shortage could be fireworks. With cities across the nation canceling public displays this Independence Day, sales of fireworks are booming as more families opt to put on their own shows. Bruce Zolden, who's the CEO of Phantom Fireworks, which has about 80 stores around the country and supplies thousands of retailers nationwide, told USA Today that fireworks sales have been unprecedented and stronger than ever in his 50 years in the industry. He said since around mid-May, when states started phased-in reopening, sales have shot up and have not slowed down. He said the company was planning on a 15% increase in sales this year, but now believes sales are around 115% higher than last year. But the reason for the increase in sales isn't only because of the holiday, which falls on a Saturday this year. People are using fireworks every night across the country right now because they're bored and have been in lockdown mode for over 3 months, and they're looking for some affordable home entertainment. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
8 Democrats are to be briefed today about allegations Russia secretly offered bounties to Taliban-linked militants for killing U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Republicans who attended a briefing yesterday on the matter expressed alarm about Russia's activities and urged the administration to hold Russian President Vladimir Putin accountable. Florida Congressman Michael Waltz.
We've known for years that the Russians have been supporting the Taliban through arms, through weapons, through other means.
Intelligence sources say top officials in the White House were aware of the bounties in early 2019, a full year earlier than had been previously reported.
Number two.
A surge in coronavirus cases has prompted several states and locales to pause or roll back reopenings as some hospital systems begin struggling under the strain. Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner.
Even though, relatively speaking, the fatality rate in the city of Houston remains relatively low, the number of people who are being affected by this virus continues to exponentially grow.
In Los Angeles, officials ordered beaches closed over the holiday weekend. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey has closed bars, gyms, movie theaters, and water parks.
Number three.
What had been a mostly peaceful protest in Detroit took a dangerous turn late Sunday when a Detroit police officer drove an SUV through a crowd of protesters after they surrounded the vehicle and began pounding on it. The officer behind the wheel gunned the accelerator, sending protesters flying onto the pavement as the vehicle lurched through the crowd. Detroit Police Chief James Craig.
So it was important for them to get out of there for their safety and certainly the safety of others. So that's where you see in the video that they accelerated to get out of there in the event they were being fired upon.
One of the men thrown from the hood clutched his leg and limped after he stood up. The other man appeared unharmed. As states prepare to safely start the upcoming school year, the American Academy of Pediatrics is pushing for students to be physically present in classrooms rather than continue in remote learning for the sake of their well-being. The group updated its back-to-school recommendations to say evidence shows the academic, mental, and physical benefits of in-person learning outweigh the risks from the coronavirus. The group says it's already seeing evidence of negative impacts on kids because of school closures in the spring.
To that point, I talked to a pediatrician who said 60% of the kids that he prescribes like ADHD medicine to, 60% have needed an increase focus with the virtual learning.
Yep.
6 minutes in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. A nurse in Western England has shared her joy at being reunited with her 2-year-old son for the first time after the coronavirus pandemic forced them to spend 11 weeks apart. Back in April, 30-year-old Charlotte Cole made the agonizing decision to move her son George to her parents' home after a confirmed coronavirus case at one of her workplaces. Yahoo Life says the care quality nurse was only able to visit the toddler through the safety of a window. Now, after 11 weeks of self-isolation, little George has been reunited with his parents, Charlotte and Daniel, after almost 3 months of separation as the government eased lockdown restrictions. While she tried to put on a brave face, Mom admitted to being a bit of an emotional wreck, but said her heart feels full again. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Did you know that right now, GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit GEICO.com to learn more.